Thanks, Jane. Beautiful. Very grateful. The next person. Beautiful person. It touched my life 9 years ago. Guidance and love. We worked together in the same capacity as volunteer. And now he works in a different capacity. We still work together. He is director now of Rosary Hall, Male Alcoholic People Health Station Unit, located in St. Vincent Charity Hospital. I am very grateful to introduce Mr. Kevin Berg.
Thank you, George. My name is Kevin Burt, and I'm very happy to be here this morning as a member of Calix, and also to share with you some information, some knowledge concerning our program at Rosary Hall. Several months ago, when Gene asked me to speak, I asked him what he would like me to talk about, and he said about 5 minutes. So you're going to hear a lot of very interesting and informative talks, lectures, speeches, etc. over the weekend. I promise not to be too lengthy. I am a recovering alcoholic. I myself was a patient at Rosary Hall back in 1969. Very briefly, I would like to review with you the history of Rosary Hall, the philosophy of Rosary Hall, and some of the methods and modalities of treatment that we employ at Rosary Hall. As Dick Turner, our president, mentioned this morning, alcoholism is in the individual. It is not in the bottle. And when the individual enters Rosary Hall, he enters a caring community, many of whom are recovering people themselves, people that genuinely care, are knowledgeable, and have developed the necessary attitudes and skills to treat this very frightened, upset, misguided, and very often hopeless person into the first stages of recovery. Last fall, Rosary Hall celebrated its 25th anniversary. It started in 1952, and it was started by the renowned Sister Ignatia, a member of the Sisters of Charity of St. Augustine. Sister Ignatia, as many of you probably know, was associated very early in the days of AA, 43 years ago in Akron, Ohio. Dr. Bob Smith, a native of Akron, practicing physician in the Akron area, knew Sister Ignatia, approached her shortly after Bill Wilson and himself hammered out the basics of the program, those things that they received from the Oxford movement and what they shared with each other. And Sister, in the goodness of her heart and in the goodness of her charity, admitted a drunk to the flower room, a storage room of St. Thomas Hospital. And that was the beginning. And how marvelous and mysterious divine providence is. Little did those three people know, or if they could project down the corridors of the years and see this vast movement that is AA today, little did they know what was happening. It's appropriate to me, I feel, that the theme of the conference is that we should let our light shine. And I was reminded of the opening words of Genesis, where the Lord God said, "Let there be light," fiat lux, let there be light. And life certainly to me seems to be this constant struggle between darkness and light, the battle of truth against falsehood, the battle, if you will, of illness, disability, sickness versus health, well-being, being alive. Saint Irenaeus told us back in the 4th or 5th century that the glory of God is a man that is truly alive. And the alcoholic is certainly not alive. He is dying. He or she is dying. And AA and the part that all of us play in AA, those working in a hospital setting, those sponsoring, other people coming along, and certainly our co-founders, Bill Wilson, who had been hospitalized over 80-some times, Dr. Bob Smith, about to lose his practice, certainly losing his health, being disgraced in the community, the medical community, and the social community of Akron. Helpless, hopeless people. And in the goodness of divine providence, this ray of light came down. And Sister Ignatia certainly was a part of this plan. And she admitted this alcoholic to St. Thomas Hospital. And the big book, of course, was published in 1939. She was there. She was knowledgeable. She worked very, very closely with the nucleus, nuclear members of the program back in the late 30s. And she remained at St. Thomas Hospital and admitted thousands of men and women down there for the next 10 years. In 1952, she was transferred to St. Vincent Charity Hospital here in Cleveland, and permission was given on the Feast of the Most Holy Rosary, October 7th, 1952, to establish a ward there. And I believe some of the old-timers are here. I think they started out with about 10 or 12 beds at that time, and including two or three beds for women. And over the next 25 years, we have admitted at Rosary Hall over 25,000 men and women alcoholics. At the moment, we do not treat females, and I'll get into that a little bit later. As all things in life, there has been change. There has been change at Rosary Hall. Originally, it was a five-day detox program. The experts today would look askance at such minimal, short treatment. But yet it was very, very effective. Granted, the therapy, at least the counseling type of therapy, it was very unstructured and informal, but it was around the clock. Sister Ignatia was there as a spiritual mother figure, knowledgeable in the ways of God and God's grace, knowledgeable, certainly, in the ways of charity, knowledgeable, too, an astute psychologist in the dynamic of the alcoholic psychology thinking mentality. And her lieutenants, her sergeants, her privates were the men and women who frequented Rosary Hall, who brought patients in and passed on to them the message of the 12 steps and opened their arms and welcomed them into this caring community that is the fellowship of AA. And a lot of stories can be told, humorous type stories, tragic type stories of the various men and women that have come to Rosary Hall, have received the help that they sought, and have returned to productive, positive lives, returned to physical health, mental well-being, and an association and in closeness with a God as they understand him that they never had before, or perhaps had, but had lost. This essentially is what still goes on at Rosary Hall. The modalities have changed. We now have 30 beds. Our stay is a two-week program rather than a very short 5 or 6 days. 2 weeks is still considered short by many, many other people in the field of alcoholic treatment and rehabilitation. I was up at Rutgers University this week attending an alumni workshop and conversing with other people that work in rehab centers and hospitals. They just can't understand how we can possibly accomplish anything in a two-week period. They're talking of 21-day minimum programs, 28-day programs. I spoke to a doctor from California. They keep them out there anywhere from 2 to 3 months. But there's pros and cons regarding this issue as length of treatment, a debatable subject. But what we do there, the first 3 or 4 days, is very closely observe the newly admitted patient. He is medically detoxified. We have 2 physicians and hospital residents. We have a staff of 10 RN nurses, complemented by another 10 nursing assistants. We have a staff of 4 counselors and 2 social workers. Our total staff, those that can be considered hospital employees, number approximately 40. And then we are backed up with another staff of volunteer workers, 40 or 50, all of whom are recovering alcoholics, men and women, who come, give of their knowledge, give of their time, give of their compassion to assist our patients and to help them get their land legs in the program. The main outline or guidelines that we use in our treatment program is an introduction to the 12 steps of AA, and we concentrate particularly on the first 5 steps of the program. Through the lectures and the other sessions in the meeting room or in the group process sessions that the patients have among themselves, it's all geared and arranged that the individual can pick out those things in his life that will enable him to, on a gut level, internalize the true meaning of that first step. And there is no recovery until the individual understands and identifies what has been the unmanageability in my life. The fact that perhaps I've lost a job, that I've been involved in automobile accidents, that I am loaded with guilt, that I'm spiritually and alienated from the practice of my religion, that I'm undergoing all types of physical problems, as mentioned by Jane. Not rare, isolated incidences of unmanageability, but more frequent, more serious, more chronic, and more acute as I have continued to drink. And then we do what we can to help him understand and appreciate powerlessness. What does it mean to be without power? What does it mean to be without the ability to say no to this compulsion to drink? All of us that are recovering alcoholics know the type of battle that we waged. How well St. Paul brought it out when he said, I do those things that I don't want to do, and those things that I don't want to do, these I do. This is the story of every alcoholic. The realization on the one hand that I should stop, that I must stop, that I will stop, and being very, very sincere in this knowledge and in this decision, and then the inability on the other hand to act on that decision and on that knowledge. That in a nutshell spells out what an addiction is, this overwhelming force and power, powerlessness to this drug, to this mood-altering substance. So what we try to do is to provide the patient with this insight, whereby he will identify totally and completely, intellectually, emotionally, with this concept of being powerless. If that was the end of the story, it truly would be sad indeed, but it is not. From there we go to 2 and 3. And they, in essence, tell us that a power does exist. There is someone or something that you can reach out to in darkness, more often than not, than in light, and that you can touch this power. You can establish some type of contact with this power. You can recover. And proofs of this process are evident to our patients. They are evident in the person of his sponsor. They are evident in the persons or in the presence of the men that return to Rosary Hall, that visit, that talk, that share, that laugh, that give. This is evident to our patients. And the dynamic, more often than not, is unconscious. The process of osmosis, a process of imprinting, it's there to see. He hears it. He's told about it. It's suggested to him. He is urged to do it, to leave that pool of hopelessness and unmanageability, and to establish this contact in faith with someone or something bigger than he is and bigger than his addiction. What becomes the most fascinating, marvelous, wonderful, thrilling, exciting, meaningful experience to every alcoholic is this sense of intoxication, this glow, this euphoria, this fantasy wonderland of being drunk and staying drunk and living in that world and never getting back to reality, to sobriety, to the nitty-gritty of daily life. And certainly one of the most insidious features of this whole process or development of addiction is the fact that it takes seed and grows and develops in an arena of unawareness. And it is always too late before the alcoholic can extricate himself from this. That constitutes this powerlessness. But by encouraging him and helping him and pushing him along and pointing out to him that he can recover, and that if he makes this decision to believe, and that he will be helped along the way, first of all by our staff and by his sponsor, and then when he is discharged, by the involvement in his own local AA community, with guarantees of success. How often I remember the words of Warren Chisholm, who we recently lost. What a remarkable man he was. And he would tell a new person that this is a guarantee that AA works. There are some simple things that you must do. They are not necessarily easy, but they are simple. And if you do them, you will reap a harvest of sobriety and of serenity and a certain measure of happiness that you have never enjoyed before. So we bring the patients along this path, the path of step one and step two and step three. Turning your will, turning your life, your past, your present, your future, your problems, your anxieties, your turmoils, the fact that maybe you're facing a divorce, that you don't have a job, that you're having difficulties with your kids. Turning this all over to this power, giving it to him, and then follow through with the suggestions that we make. Don't be afraid. Trust us. Believe in us. You're not the first one that has traveled a similar path. It will get better. It does get better. And then we introduce the patient to the fourth and fifth step, the house cleaning steps, the inventory steps, the two very, very vital steps that the big book talks about. We make some suggestions as to how he can go about taking these two particular steps. And here, too, he's faced with another very anxiety-provoking task. It's a frightening thing to turn the spotlight of truth on oneself, on one's behavior, on one's past, and to admit these things. It's not too difficult to admit them to yourself or to God, but to unload, to unburden, to psychologically and spiritually vomit into the lap of another human being. This is difficult, but we feel it is very, very necessary. While the taking of the fourth and fifth step are not mandatory before discharge at Rosary Hall, we thoroughly instruct the patients into the basics of these two particular steps. We encourage them to unburden themselves of anything that they may be making them uptight or that they're having problems with, and certainly to return back to Rosary Hall before too long, see Father John, see Father Gregory, see one of the counselors, see one of the other visiting clergymen, and take the bull by the horns and get this job done and get it behind you. While our patients are there, they learn about the physical aspects of the disease, the psychological aspects of the disease, the sociological aspects of the disease. We all know that alcoholism is a family illness. And at the very beginning, we do invite and bring the family into the treatment process. The family is informed of the time of our family meetings, and we have two a week. The spouse, the older children, come down. They learn some of the basic information regarding alcoholism, the disease. They meet in a classroom setting. They meet in a group setting whereby they can ventilate and air some of their anxieties, some of their problems. They do not meet with the patient. They meet with a social worker or a staff member. And you are offered the same type of hope that we give the inpatient, the male inpatient. The staff meets four times a week, and we review with each other the individual charts or case histories of each patient. We assess and determine how they are doing physically, how they are doing psychologically, what type of social setting they came from, what type of social setting they are returning to, how they are doing spiritually. We share and pool this information. We devise a treatment plan. We bring the patient into the process of the treatment plan, the establishment of goals, objectives. The first one being, of course, ongoing activity in the AA community. While the patient is there, he is encouraged to read the big book, a copy of the big book, a copy of the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, a guide to the four-step inventory, is at his bedside. We do have another library there. Other literature concerning the program, concerning alcoholism, is available to him. Father John speaks Monday through Friday on the ABCs of addiction. Members of the AA community and Al-Anon come to Rosary Hall throughout the week to provide those speaking slots in the afternoon and evening hours. And we have a broad cross-section of people represented. We have blue-collar workers, we have white-collar workers, we have some very wealthy people, we have some poor people, we have some highly educated people, and we have some eighth-grade graduates. And here again, this points out the the remarkable effectiveness and power of this program, of AA, this universal appeal, where if I don't identify with one person, I can identify with another. I can get something, perhaps, from a steel worker, or a salesman, or a lawyer, or a physician, or a clergyman. I can identify with these people because they are human beings and they have the same disease that I have. It's irrelevant as far as their status in the community is concerned, or some of their accomplishments. It's not a primary relevancy, at least. And so our patients do gain this type of help from the AA community that so generously and charitably come to Rosary Hall, many of whom have gone through the program themselves in years past. So the plant is there in this climate of unconditional positive regard, in this atmosphere of the caring community. And the sprouts of faith and the sprouts of hope begin to poke up through that hard soil of active alcoholism. The patient is discharged. Prior to discharge, he is told and informed about our aftercare program. This is something that started about 3 years ago. It started initially to conform with some of the standards established by the Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Hospitals. As many of you probably know, Uncle Sam and state governments are getting into the field of treatment here in recent years. And it has its positive aspects and it has its negative aspects. But they are doing many, many things that certainly the old-timers in AA kind of bristle at and resent. But to stay in business, a hospital must conform to these particular type of practices, guidelines, and instructions from state and federal levels. And as Jane mentioned, I feel that it is our job to cooperate with government and with other community agencies for the benefit of the suffering person and make the best of the situation and utilize the help of these various other agencies for the benefit of the alcoholic. That is why we started our aftercare program. And it has been very, very successful these past 3 years. It consists of a return visit on the part of the recently discharged patient to Rosary Hall. He will meet with our aftercare counselor, either Father Gregory French, who you will hear later today, or Bob Carpenter. They will meet in a group setting for about an hour. And they will discuss and share and talk over how things are going. How are you handling the urge to drink? How are things at home? How are things at work? Are you going to meetings? We do not view the aftercare meeting as an AA meeting. It is a bridge into the AA community. While in treatment and during the 8-week period of aftercare, the necessity of and the importance of ongoing AA activity is stressed over and over and over again. None of us have been cured. We are in the process of recovery, in the process of getting well, physically, psychologically, socially, and spiritually. And this is pointed out to our patients also, that this recovery is a process, as indeed life is. Following the 8-week period of aftercare, by the way, simultaneously with the patient aftercare, the wives and the children participate in their own aftercare program also. And after this period, our patients, through the help of their sponsors, have found themselves some groups in their own neighborhood or someplace in the city where they feel relatively comfortable at. And that is another new beginning for them. They are encouraged to come back to Rosary Hall. We have a coffee room there that is open from 7:30 in the morning till 10 at night. They can come down and talk, visit with the patients, visit with each other, see one of the staff if they care to, and get back in touch with life. This urge to drink this urge or need to experience intoxication that I mentioned a little earlier is something that stays with the alcoholic until he dies. And certainly what AA is all about, one of the things it is all about through this contact with a higher power and an association with that higher power's agents, other members of AA, is keeping in check on a conscious level this urge to experience intoxication. All of us know people that for one reason or other have returned to drinking after many, many years of sobriety. For one reason or other, they decided to drink and they did. And all of us know the consequences of that decision, of a relapse. I understand it. I certainly don't judge anybody that relapses. It could well happen to me. But I also realize that for me and for every alcoholic to control or to keep in check this urge to drink, it is necessary that he do so on a conscious level. And that is what AA is all about. Going to meetings, sponsoring, giving and receiving, using the 24-hour book, asking for saying a prayer in the morning for guidance and sobriety, saying thanks at night, going on to AA retreats and weekends. This is how we stay sober. This is how we grow. And this is how we truly come alive. Any program is only as good as the people that staff the program. And Rosary Hall down through the years indeed has been blessed. Sister Ignatia, a saintly woman, a woman of charity, a woman of God, that literally touched thousands and thousands and thousands of men and women, and their children today are reaping the benefit of her charity. Sister Victorine, a remarkable woman. The administrative ability and brains of a man and the heart and the compassion of the most tender of women. Father John, the owl of Rosary Hall. He has been lecturing there at Rosary Hall for a dozen years or more. He put together the ABCs of addiction. He's a wise man. He's a knowledgeable man. He is a good man. And here again, thousands of men and women in the Cleveland area, the greater Cleveland area, and in the Midwest and in other parts of the country have benefited from his illness and his recovery and his charity. Our doctors, our nurses, our counselors, our volunteers, the AA community at large, most of whom I feel look with favor upon Rosary Hall, although we are the recipients of brickbats from time to time for one reason or other. But this is life, and this is certainly life in AA from time to time. So things have changed during the past 25 years. Things have changed quite drastically in the past 3 or 4 years at Rosary Hall. And I anticipate change, but a viable positive change in the years to come. I am indeed grateful that I found recovery and the grace of God at Rosary Hall. I am grateful that I have an opportunity to share and to give somewhat of myself and of what I have learned at Rosary Hall, in AA, through my association with Calix, to the people that come there. In conclusion, I'd like to borrow and paraphrase somewhat the litany of hope that Father James Keller put together when he established the Christopher Movement. And I see this litany, or I can apply this litany certainly to Rosary Hall, and indeed, in a broader sense, to Calix and to AA. It's the message of AA, the sense of optimism and the sense of hope, the sense of light overcoming the darkness. Hope looks for the good in people instead of harping on the worst. Hope opens doors where despair closes them. Hope discovers what can be done instead of grumbling about what cannot. Hope draws its power from a deep trust in God and the basic goodness of mankind. Hope lights the candle instead of cursing the darkness. Hope regards problems, small or large, as opportunities. Hope cherishes no illusions, nor does it yield to cynicism. Hope sets big goals and is not frustrated by repeated difficulties or setbacks. Hope pushes ahead when it would be easy to quit. Hope puts up with modest gains, realizing that the longest journey starts with the first step. Hope accepts misunderstandings as the price for serving the greater good of others. Hope is a good loser because it has the divine assurance of final victory. In the world you will have trouble, but be brave. I have conquered the world. Take hope, all you that leave here. Thank you.